Welcome to the Brett Boone Podcast. Explore the mind of MLB All-Star, Silver Slugger, and Gold Glove winner, Brett Boone, as he sits down with his friends from the world of professional sports. Now up to bat, Brett Boone.
Today on the program, we're going to go down these managerial changes lately. We've got Rob Bradford, Boston, Red Sox insider. But first, we're going to go with a former teammate of mine, one of my favorite teammates. He's Phillies broadcaster. Welcome in, Ben Davis. It's been a minute. Saw you last year during the season, but we're back. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Booney.
All right, I'm shocked. Are you shocked? Let me give you a little background. A year ago, back on the field, and when we played the Phillies, Ben, there was three teams last year that opened my eyes when we played them. You know, and it's win or loss. It didn't matter. Philly was one of those teams where they left Arlington. And I said to myself, that's a good team right there. That's a World Series. They could win a World Series. Now, it didn't end up happening. They got bumped early in the postseason. But top to bottom, that was right before Wheeler got hurt. It was just an impressive team. Just their gravitas that they had on the field, talent aside, I thought that was one of the big teams in 2025, and had huge expectations for them in the East this year, with obviously the Mets, who have been very disappointing to this point, and you knew Atlanta was going to be kind of a three city fight for that division. So far, it hasn't been that way. Tell me what happened, the firing, what's going on in Philly?
Well, the firing, I think they just needed a fall guy. It's not Rob Thompson's fault. You know, they just figured they needed to make a change, and they thought, you know, why not the manager? And I will say that every player has been very accountable. When questioned about the firing of Thompson, they've all said, this is not on Topper. This is on us. This is 100% our fault, and we're sad to see him go. Front office said, you know, we need a change. We need to make a change. And Rob Thompson was that change. Now you have Don Mattingly, who is very capable as well, to run the ball club. But what has happened to the ball club? They're just not doing much of anything really well right now. Now they started to shape into form a little bit recently. They're 5-1 in their last six games. So that is something that's been a little bit better for them. You know, as you look at it right now, the pitching starting to be, it's supposed to be the backbone of this ball club, pitching and slug. The starting pitching has not been up to snuff this year. They haven't gotten, it's nice getting Wheeler back, but they just haven't been what we thought they were going to be. The bullpen has been okay. The offense just has never really gotten it going. And that's something that's, everyone said, well, you're older. I'm not buying that, Booney. I'm not doing it. I think they just have, the approach is just not there right now. Do I think it's in there? 100%. It's still in there. But they just have to get back to being themselves, being better situationally. And they gotta play, just better baseball overall.
Yeah, and Thompson, he was... From all accounts, and I don't know Rob, but from all accounts, the players loved him. He was beloved in the city. He's been there for 4 years in the playoffs every single season. And just for me, it was a little like, okay, a month in? That's a little, for somebody that has that kind of track record and is liked in that clubhouse, that was a little quick for me. Now, having Mattingly sitting right there, that was kind of a convenient, guy that you could hand the ball club over to. And I want to get into that a little bit later. But Philly's a tough city, and those fans are tough. I mean, if you go to Philly, you go to New York, Boston, Cubs to a degree when there's high expectations. They don't put up with a lot, and if the team doesn't perform, I'm with you. I mean, 6 months ago, this is a team that I'm looking at going, that's one of the best teams in Major League Baseball. I haven't seen too many teams better than them. To go from that to a last-place team, I don't buy it, and I can't chalk that up to age in that quick of a time frame.
No, no, you can't. We've seen glimpses of it this year and to where they need to get back to. I firmly believe this is a playoff team, Booney. And, people have called me crazy here in this town. They just haven't gotten it going. It's in there. We've seen it. You saw it last year and 6 months ago. I'm thinking, we're going to have a parade down Broad Street in South Philadelphia. But It has not been that way this year. I look for it to turn very quickly. And, you know, the players want it to turn very quickly. I will say this is the most professional bunch of players that I've ever been around, Booney. These guys come in, they work their tails off. They look at film, they study. You know, they're not just throwing their gloves and their bats and balls out on the field and say, oh, we win. We're the fourth highest payroll in baseball. We win. They don't go about it like that. It's fun to watch on a daily basis. Have they gotten the results that they wanted? Obviously not. But the approach is still there. The commitment and dedication and professionalism is still there.
I think you look, and you said the bullpen. You know, the bullpen's okay. They were 20th a year ago in 25. As I checked it yesterday, they're sitting at 20th in Major League Baseball from a ranking in the bullpen. So I don't think that's changed much. Obviously, Duran, one of the most dynamic closers in all the game, has been out. Getting him back is going to make a big difference at the end of games in Philadelphia. But I look at this, Mattingly 5-1 since he's taken over. Harper's off to a decent start. He's got 6 homers. Schwarber's leading the league in home runs. You know, so there are some positive things. The Bohm situation, his personal situation, couple that with what he's doing at the plate, that's a little troubling for me if I look at it. Real Muto, you just got back. Trey Turner's going to be Trey Turner. And Marsh has been a kind of a real positive in that lineup for you. He's kind of the guy. You know, I started watching this Marsh guy with the hair a couple years ago. I'm like, who is this guy? But the more I watch him, he just kind of isn't kind of in the middle of everything. It seems like every time I tune into a Philly game, Marsh is doing something, whether he's hitting a double or in the middle of a big play. He just seems to be that catalyst at this stage. And I look no farther. Sanchez at the top of the rotation with Wheeler. There's 2 studs. Yeah. I was a little bit hesitant when you let Suarez go a year ago. Suarez is huge to me. But then I thought, no, you've got Nola, you've got Lizardo. They've got off to real slow starts, but the stuff is there, especially when I look at Lizardo. The stuff is really there from that left side, and I think you can look no farther than that. The early struggles of Nola, Lizardo, and with Wheeler being out, now he's back, and he looks like the Weaver of old. So I don't know. I'm with you. I think with Atlanta, I haven't looked today, but does Atlanta have the best record in all of baseball? Because last year they went from a very disappointing season. They had a firing. Walt Weiss took over, and they haven't missed a beat in the 2026 season.
Yeah, the Braves are good, Booney. And, you know, you remember playing down there. I mean, you were there in Atlanta playing. It's a city that loves the Braves, and they just haven't had a whole lot to cheer about the last couple of years because of injury. Now, Acuna going out with a bad hammy. He's on the IL again. But this is something that's really plagued this ball club and the Braves, and the fact that, you know, Olsen plays every day, but you had Albies out, you had Acuna out, you had Riley out. I mean, these are big factors. The pitching is a question mark because some of the, you know, Strider's been out. There's so many question marks there. But yet, you know, they've relatively stayed somewhat healthy this year. They have a very good ball club, and they've been together for a lot of years. That being said, I still think this division at the end of the season, at the end of 162 games, will be up for grabs because I just think it's, you know, the old cliche, the back of the baseball card, we've heard a million times. But it is true when it comes to these guys, especially with the Phillies. I think they're going to be just fine, you know, and getting these guys back. But you're right. Guys like Brandon Marsh, these guys need to step up. And Brandon Marsh has stepped it up a lot this year. This guy's a big dude. He's very physical. He's an unbelievable wide receiver in high school. Ends up signing out of high school to play with the Angels. But plays an amazing left field. And he's gotten it together. He's starting to hit lefties a little bit better. He's staying back. He's using the whole field. So I think guys like that in this lineup can start to make some of these adjustments. They're going to be better off offense.
East Coast, and we're going to have Rob Bradford coming up to discuss the Boston situation and the firing early on in Boston with Alex Cora. But these were the two divisions, Ben. And the preseason shows that I was doing, you know, they asked me to pick. I said, it's going to be the Mets, Phillies, and Atlanta. I thought the Mets were a lot better. They've got off to a horrible start. And then I looked in the American League, and, you know, the Yankees are going to be there. Saw the Red Sox a year ago win 89 games. I thought they overachieved. You know, Bregman came over and added a big presence in that clubhouse. But I didn't expect them to win 89 games. And then all of a sudden, Cora's gone. Kind of a fixture in Boston. Won a World Series there. Considered kind of, you know, by the by by the people in baseball as one of the top managers in baseball. And all of a sudden, no, you're gone. Nobody's safe in this game. And I think that's an East Coast thing. It's like, you got to fire someone, like you said at the opening, and you're not going to fire the players. Ben, I want to talk about your career a little bit. And did you ever have a season where your manager on a particular club you were playing was fired mid-season?
No, I never have. And that's kind of why I was a little bit, not surprised, but kind of, you know, Rob Thompson, really? Like, is it really that? You know, Thune, you and I played for some great managers. And I would say for me, I don't know about you, but Bruce Bochy was my favorite manager. You always knew where you stood with him. He would call you in his office, say, I need you to do this, that, and the other. You know, you can't be doing this anymore. Otherwise, you're not going to find yourself in the lineup. I love that about Boch. That's the way Rob Thompson was. I've never seen anyone as prepared as Rob Thompson or his staff. I mean, these guys are getting to the field every day, 11:30, 12 o'clock for a 6:40 game. I mean, it's incredible. They have backup plans for their backup plans. But, you know, again, front office decided we're going to move on from you and bring in Don Mattingly. And I think it is a lot of the East Coast thing. Like, you know, you got to put up W's. Otherwise, your job is on the line. And it's, you know, I know it's part of the business, but you hate to see when good people go.
Yeah, it is. It's a part of it. And it's, you know, I've had managers fired midseason and people have been asking me lately, is it that big of a difference? For the most part, no. I mean, it's almost like maybe it's a wake up call for the players internally down in that clubhouse and they get together. And it's almost like we got to start playing up to our capabilities and maybe even win this thing out of spite, you know, because we're pissed on how things are going. Don Mattingly obviously heralded, you know, around baseball. It's just a beloved guy across baseball, not just Philadelphia, but everywhere he's ever been from being a player. Give me a little bit of insight to Don Mattingly. And I did want to touch on a guy that I had in Texas a year ago, Adolis Garcia, is now roaming right field for the Phillies. Touch on those two guys, and I'll let you get on with your day. I know you got golf plans today, Ben.
I do. It's actually nice here back here outside of Philly. Adolis has been great. You know, obviously, it's you're looking at a physical specimen. I said before, I want to see this guy run the football like 25 times a game. Like, who's going to tackle him? He's unbelievable. I mean, this guy's got muscles everywhere. But he's been great. I love his energy. His right field play is ridiculous. And I love to watch him throw a baseball. You don't see really good outfield arms anymore. People don't take a lot of pride in that, in my opinion. But this guy loves to throw the baseball. He's got a short arm, and man, that ball just comes out of his hand hot. He's had some big hits for the Phillies. He's using the whole field a little bit more. That's something he tried to make a concerted effort in spring training in doing so. But he's been great. I know he's a great clubhouse guy. And, you know, I think it's a great addition for the Phils. You know, 1 year, $10 million, what could go wrong? I'm sure he would like to be a little better from an average standpoint, get that average up a little bit. But overall, he's been great. And, you know, look for great things out of him. Don Mattingly, he's so iconic. You see him in that clubhouse. You think about what he did as a player. You think about what he's done as a manager, you know, down with Miami and now obviously in Philadelphia. But the players obviously really respect him. He's pretty much the same guy as Rob Thompson. You know, he and Topper spent a lot of years together under the tutelage of Joe Torre in with the Yankees. So they're very, kind of, you know, of the same cloth, I guess you could say. But the players obviously, you know, like him. You could have brought in Connie Mack to manage this ball club. Bryce Harper knows he's going to hit third. Trey Turner knows he's going to lead off. Kyle Schwarber knows he's going to hit second every day. So, you know, from a managerial standpoint, I think you might see a few more tactical things with regards to maybe hit and run, maybe a couple more bunts. We've already seen a couple more bunts with Don Mattingly as the manager. But I think overall, you're going to get the same guy as Rob Thompson. It's just, you know, again, they figured they needed to see have a different voice in that clubhouse, and it's going to be Don Mattingly. But you know, again, you hate to see someone go, but if someone is going to come in to fill those shoes, I think Don Mattingly is the right guy to do it. Just different voice, a calming presence. And, you know, I think it's, you know, at the end of the day, it's going to be a good thing for the Phils.
And just, you know, looking from the outside in, I look at Don Mattingly, it's like he didn't come to Philly for this to happen and take over. I think it's the last thing he thought going into the season was, oh, I'm here to get, man, you know, you hear the talk about his son as the general manager in Philly and the connection. Yeah. But the last thing I think he thought was, I'm going to be at the helm here a month in. I think he left Toronto last year, came to Philly with zero expectations of doing anything except for being the bench coach. Long term, do you think Mattingly is a long term move, or do you think this is something that's just going to be for the interim?
No, I think it's interim. I don't know. You know, you look at it and they asked him in spring training, he said, I was questioning coming back this year. He goes, but because of my relationship with Rob Thompson, I thought it was a good fit. I don't think he wants to be that guy. He said, I don't know if I want to put in all those hours and do all that. You know, he's done that. He's run that race. But I think this is more of an interim thing for Don Mattingly. I could be completely wrong, but I think he kind of hinted at this is, you know, not something he wanted to do again. But I could not imagine, you know, my son being the boss of me. about that. You know, his son Preston's his boss, basically. It is. Yeah. So I couldn't imagine that, one of my children being the boss of me, but I guess they kind of feel like they are anyway, right?
Yeah. I think if he goes, Dad, this is how we're going to do things. Wait a minute. You're still dad, and you still get that look you can give your kids like, yeah, all right, bozo. Yeah, we'll handle things the way we handle them.
Yeah. How does that dynamic go? You sit down, does he call him dad?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, we got Jakey Boone in New York. He works in the front office for the Mets. And you think about that one day, you know, you work for the Mets and your son's your boss. Yeah, that's a bit of a bizarre world. Yeah. Well, Ben, I appreciate it, man. Go golfing. Appreciate you coming on the Brett Boone podcast. Next up, we're going to have Rob Bradford, the author of Baseball Isn't Boring, coming up to talk about what's going on in Boston and the shakeup there. But until next time, tune in, check it out on YouTube. If you want to listen to the podcast, download on the Odyssey app or wherever you download your podcast. Till next time, keep it here. Thanks, Ben. And we're back with part two of the Brett Boone podcast this week. Thanks again to Ben Davis, Philly's color analyst, for coming on and talking a little bit down the street from our next guest. Our next guest is author, Baseball Isn't Boring. He's a Red Sox insider, friend of the program, and part of the Odyssey family. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Rob Bradford. Rob, I appreciate you taking some time today and talking about your debacle.
There is no human being I'd rather be talking to more than Brett Boone right now. So thank you for having me. The chaos kind of came out of nowhere, but it hasn't stopped ever since it started.
It's unbelievable. And I was just talking to Ben, you know, that was a big kind of shock to me, the Philly situation. You know, Mattingly comes from Toronto and it's easy for him to slide in. I think that's the last thing Don Mattingly was thinking was going to happen, especially for me being on the field a year ago, watching that Phillies team. Mm-hmm. I thought they were really good, Rob. I thought they were an elite team. I thought they were World Series caliber. Obviously, it didn't work out for them in 2025. But to go from the team I saw 6-7 months ago on the field to how they started, that was a big shock. Obviously, they fired Rob Thompson. It's different on the East Coast. It's different in Philadelphia. It's different in New York. It's different in Boston than it is pretty much anywhere else. I mean, those fans get riled up and they want to win, and they want to win now, and they don't care how. Just tell me how it all came down. I'll give you my two cents, but being a complete outsider, I have no idea what really happened. You're close to this team on the daily basis. Were you shocked?
Oh yeah, I was shocked, and I actually am really, really interested in getting your perspective about a lot of things, including, by the way, you know, the fact of the matter is that pretty much all the guys who were let go besides Cora were hitting guys. And there's been a lot of conversation with that. They promoted a lot of driveline guys. So, you know, like I said, I'm anxious to get sort of your take on that. But everybody was shocked. I think that it had gotten to that point, much like in Philadelphia, much like maybe in New York with the Mets, that you had to start looking at the manager or a coach, but certainly not the manager and six coaches. It was unheard of. And when I started getting the text that night, that Saturday night, at first I had heard something about Veritek. And then it's a lot of guys. And then you get the, oh my goodness, how many guys? And it's including Cora. So all of that was incredible. And I think that, you know, the line from now, I revealed it was from Josh Beckett the next morning, was he said, this is like crapping your pants and changing your shirt. You use crapping, but it's, you know, that's how it kind of felt. It was, yeah, you don't have a good team, but how in the world is this going to solve it, where you have to start from scratch in relationships and everything across the board? And it's just kept, Brett, it's just kept on going for the last week about trying to figure all this out. And now it's starting to trickle into little bits of chaos in the clubhouse, on the field. Yeah, it certainly hasn't all of a sudden just turned around and been a parade here.
Yeah, you know, I looked at it, and Alex Cora, obviously, he's considered kind of across Major League Baseball channels and definitely people as one of the top current managers in the game. You know, I look at his contract, and he's got $14 million left on it, and all of a sudden, nope, we're done. A month into the season. Now, I looked at the Red Sox a year ago. I thought they were a decent team. I thought 89 wins was overachieving for them a year ago. I'll be honest with you, sitting on the other side of the field, watching this team, thought they were a good team. 89 wins, a lot. Now, all of a sudden, I look at the offseason. You get Contreras, Suarez, who I thought was huge, coming over from Philly. Sonny Gray. I've always been a Sonny Gray fan, coming over from St. Louis. And I thought, you know what? They're going to be better now. A year ago, you had the Devers thing in the beginning of the season, which was a big distraction. They got past that. And like I said, 189 games. Bregman, obviously a big loss for them. You know, it seemed from everyone I talked to, he seems to be a real presence and a difference maker in a clubhouse. But moving on with the game, I looked at this team, Rob, and we're doing our beginning of the season shows. And our preseason and our picks, and we always do that. You know, we're right sometimes, we're wrong sometimes. But I looked at this team, I said, this is a better team than it was a year ago. And a year ago, they won 89 games. So I expect these guys, I actually picked the Boston Red Sox to win that division. And, you know, it shows you how right I am. And it's really, it's crazy to me what's going on in the American League in general. I mean, there's like four teams with a 500 or better record, and the Yankees and Tampa Bay being two of them in your division. But it goes deeper than the Red Sox. It's Baltimore. Are they better? Yeah, I thought they were a little better, but I wasn't excited about Baltimore in that division. Toronto, a year ago, really good. They had some team chemistry that you really can't that you really can't teach. I saw it from across the field. Is, hey, they've got something special here. Bo Bichette moved on, but they still had the crux of that team of a year ago that went to the World Series intact. And they're off to a really rough start. You know, I saw the players complaining, Trevor Story making it. And I take that from a player's perspective. I've been in shakeups before as a player. And, you know, what I found out a long time ago, I thought, you know, I have an opinion, of course, but that's not a place for me to really stick my nose in. It's like the owner of the team is going to do what he wants to do. He signs my checks. He or she signs my checks. And that's not my business. And for me to say, well, I need an explanation. Well, I always thought, well, who is Brett Boone to demand I need an explanation to you? I'm not. So I saw that. I think that was a little much. I don't think we needed that, but I don't know if that's been worked out. When I first saw it, yeah, obviously it's Boston. There's expectations. Maybe there was expectations that there weren't a year ago. That's a high charge city, and they expect to go to the postseason every year. So I thought, okay, maybe they just made this knee jerk change. Didn't make sense to me though. It didn't make sense with the people involved. Like you said, a lot of the staff members, Jason Veritek, one of the big pillars in the early 2000s when them and the Yankees had that unbelievable rivalry, to dismiss him as well. Alex Cora, he's been there since 2018, I think, with the exception of 20, World Series champion, and really revered around the league. It seemed to me, and this was just a gut when it went down, was it's more than they're just off to a rough start. It had to be something. I don't know if it's Breslow and Cora. I don't know what it is, but layman's terms, I'm just sitting there thinking this isn't a normal fire.
Yeah. I think absolutely this wasn't just, well, you know, six guys aren't doing a good job. It was more of to your point, I think Craig Breslow wants to enact his people, his way of doing things. And maybe he felt like there was even more push and pull than there had been previously. The weird thing is, Brett, is that not only do you sign out his quarterly extension, Breslow did a couple of years ago, which, by the way, it was a 3-year extension, and they offered him a 5-year extension and he turned it down. But they signed 3 of the coaches who were fired to contract extensions this offseason. So you had pushed your chips to the middle of the table with this group, and then you folded in April, which was weird. But I think that ultimately what it was that not only did they feel that, hey, we got these players, all the players that you talked about, we think these players are better than they're producing, and they're not so much the problem as the way they're being directed is the problem. That's number one. And number two, longer term, which is sort of, I don't want to, power struggle is a strong word, but the philosophy and the way that things are done, as I said to you, you know, you had a lot of driveline guys be promoted. You know, Pete Fatsy wasn't necessarily a pure driveline guy. I think Pete Fatsy's a great hitting coach. But, you know, the guy who's John Sutteropoulos, who stayed driveline guy, Hetzler, driveline guy, and those guys are promoted. That's the philosophy that they want and they want to instill. And if they felt like there was any pushback on that or pushback on the roster of the guys that they got, then that's going to lead to some dysfunction to the point of these guys being let go.
It's so funny to me when they talk about coaches, how important we are to the bottom line, you know. I've thought about this a lot, and I just go back to my playing days, and I thought, how many years did I, you know, let's say I had a mediocre year offensively or a down year offensively. Not for one millisecond, did I ever sit there and go, oh, well, if we wouldn't have had that hitting coach, I'd have really killed it this year. It's nonsense. Yeah. It's absolute nonsense. I just see the game today, and I love the game. And I love last year going back on the field and my guys. But the bottom line is, Rob, and it'll never change. We can get driveline in and get every analytical theory you want going. It's about competing at 7 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about your swing. It's not about your back foot pushing off a front stiff foot. It has nothing to do with anything. That's great for when you're 12 and you're looking for some basic fundamentals of the baseball swing. That's great. These guys could really help with that. But at the big league level, you are a big leaguer. I don't babysit you. I don't give you hitting lessons every day. I expect you to be a pro, the best in the world. My job is to get you in the right frame of mind to compete tonight. And I don't think that's what we do. Everything's about the swing. Everything's about mechanical thing. It has nothing to do with mechanical. Has nothing to do with it. And we keep doing this. And I watch behind the scenes. I go, this is crazy.
Well, let me ask you this, because I'm so glad you said this, because it's been top of mind for me, which is, you know, every organization now has not only analytical guys, baseball scientists, and all these people who I'm sure are trying to do a good job, but they also have to justify their existence with information. So,
absolutely. So, bingo.
So then, and you probably got some of this, you know, with Rangers. So then you have all this information, and it's being, I talked to a guy on the staff. He's like, I can't believe how much information we're getting. Like, I spent an hour trying to sift through this, decipher it, and then you have to disseminate it. So through all that information that's being dumped on them, ultimately what you're talking about, I mean, I'm so glad you said that, because ultimately I'm thinking, when you step in the batter's box, how many things are you thinking about?
It's ridiculous. And I love the technology today. I am jealous that I was born when I was born, because I would love having the information these guys have today at their fingertips. Give me everything. Give me every analytical. And you know what? I'm a big leaguer. I'm a pro. I know how to decipher. I know what works for me. And I, but I want it all. I give me it all, and I'll decipher. I'll pick what mm-hmm. what works for me and my swing and my approach. But when you break it down to mechanics, it just doesn't matter. It's about competing. It's about coming to the ballpark and knowing, Rob, I've got my A swing today. And when I had my A swing in my best years, whoever's pitching on the other side, they might be in for a long night because I'm feeling it. And mm-hmm. I'm going to stand tall and back leg you because I'm seeing it great. I'm in great position. Whatever reason, you go through strings like this and you try to bottle them because they don't last very long, believe me. But I knew when I had my A swing, and I'll take it out there and I'm gonna do as much damage as I can. Well, now, and that's very rare. That's a small percentage of the time. Do you have that Tiger Woods step into the tee box mentality because you're just locked in? But I always compared it to golf. I said, our job as big league hitters is to know who am I today? What do I got today? I'm getting loose early. Man, I'm not seeing the ball the way I normally do. I'm not getting my foot down in time. My mechanics are a little off, but I've got a game at 7 o'clock. And guess what? I got a game at 7 o'clock tomorrow and the next day and the next day. And there's nowhere to hide. So I don't have time to have hitting lessons. I have time to tweak a little bit. I also don't want to overexert myself because I play every day. I need to decide and go through my routine, whatever that is for the day. As we get closer to game time, okay, I know what I am today. Today's a B swing. Today is, I've got to find a way to move it around. It doesn't mean I can't hit a homer today. I might, but I'm not at my best, and I recognize that. It might be a C swing. It might be I need to survive today, and I would talk to these kids about it all the time. It's like being a PGA Tour golfer. You get to the tee on Saturday, and if you don't have that it factor, what do the great players do? They find a way to live to play another day. They don't go out and shoot 77 and blow up their tournament, trying to knock pins down in bad locations, taking risks. They don't have that swing. They find a way to carve it around the golf cart course, shoot even par, and not blow their tournament up. Maybe tomorrow they'll find something. And that's what baseball is. That's what 162 games is. It's about showing up, knowing what swing I have. Has nothing to do with my mechanics. You're a big leaguer. You're not a 16U player. And I think a lot of the way the culture is now, that's how these kids come up. They come up as showcase kids. Everything I ever did in my life was to showcase. I didn't learn how to compete. I didn't learn how to win. I didn't learn how to get my butt kicked and get back off the mat. Now, I prefaced all this with what I saw. I love these guys. I love the players. They're completely different than my generation, but they're still big leaguers and they're still talented as heck. I just think we've veered off into a place where OPS has become the biggest thing. I think OPS is horrible for the game of baseball because now there's no, I've got to play tomorrow. Rob, when I played, what was it? It was my average, my home runs, and if I drove in 100, that was going to get me the contract, right?
Yeah.
Now, today, nobody cares about driving in 100. They care about an 800 OPS.
And by the way, they also just care about like things like bat speed. Like a guy might not get signed because, oh, well, we see his bat speed isn't up to snuff. Forget about the back of the baseball card. And I don't mean to interrupt you, but you're making me think about, and you just had on Ben Davis about the Phillies and the Red Sox. I think there's a big difference there for what you're talking about for the players understanding that. The players, and you tell me if you think I'm wrong, it's fine, but the players in that Phillies, the way that roster is constructed, my guess is that they understand what you're talking about.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
The Red Sox, there's a lot of young guys in there. This was a first guest narrative when it came to this team without Alex Bregman. Before him, it was Justin Turner. Before him, JD Martinez, whoever it was. But there wasn't a lot of guys in there who you say, this is how you're going to do it. And this is how you're going to guide through it. It's just completely different. And that's the thing that worries me about this dynamic right now, because of all the great things that you're saying. You should put a stool in the middle of that room and basically be speaking to these guys. because they need to hear it. They need to hear it. And unfortunately for them, the another person or people they would be hearing it from would be Alex Cora and the coaching staff. But the coaching staff, Chad Tracy, great guy, going to be a good manager, is drinking from a fire hose right now. So, yeah, I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, it's just, it is what it is. And it's and you're right, it's young players. I used to sit there, and because nowadays we always want to talk about velocity. People want to hit off, oh, crank that thing up to 110. I said, what does that accomplish? What I try to do before a game is I don't want to go blow myself up. It's tough to get your adrenaline to game speed in a practice environment. So I don't want to crank the machine up to 100. I want a nice, soft ball in the middle of the plate that I can sit here and move this ball around the cage, move it around the field when we hit on the field, which I think is really important, and feel good. When I go to the range, I'm not going to wear myself out on the golf range. Oh, I'm only averaging 297 this tournament. I got to average 308. Well, that's not going to keep the ball in the middle of the fairway. I want to go out there and okay, I can hit this little cut fairway finder. I can now I can, all right, when I really go out, okay, how does the wedge feel? I'm hitting it on the square face of the club. Okay, let's go to the tee box. I feel good. I don't want to wear myself out hitting 100 and I pulled one on the barrel to the pull side and went, okay, my bat speed's there as I'm sweating going to the national anthem. It's like we want to feel good. So when we take the field, we have good thoughts. Hey, I did what I wanted in BP today. You know, I moved the ball around. I kept it on the barrel. I feel good. Let's go into the game and compete. That's what we do. We go and compete. And it's just, I used to sit there and I'd watch. And there are pros out there. Believe me, there are some elder players that really know how to prepare. And sometimes, and I used to call myself, I'd point to Simeon. I'd say, Simeon, you're a player. And I'd point to myself. I said, me? I'm a background player. If I can help you one iota, then I'm doing my job. But I watch guys like that prepare. I watch Corey Seager prepare. He hits slow curve balls all day. That's how he prepares for a game. Why? Because he wants to get his body in hitting position. And he knows if he can hit a 56-mile-an-hour curve ball and control the barrel, he's going to get to everything he wants to get to. And I just used to point to the young players and say, watch Corey Seager. I'm not saying be like Corey Seager, hit like him.
Yeah.
He's a little bit of a unicorn. But look how he trains. That's how the best hitters in the world train to play every night. We don't get to the park at 12 o'clock and swing, take 1,000 swings.
But how awesome. How
got 100 games left.
How awesome was it that you had, were able to have, and you've been in plenty of clubhouses like this, people pointing to you, but to have people play, whether it's that one Corey Seager or multiple Corey Seagers, where you can point to a guy, say, hey, watch him. Watch how he does it.
Exactly. I'd sit there and I'd say the key. And I laugh at, the Rangers, they won the World Series in 23. And I'm sitting there and we've got a roster. And at the end of the season, we almost, we're a game out with 10 to go. Corey Seager, Simeon, Evan Carter, Wyatt Langford all went down. And Nathan Eovaldi, who was probably going to win the Cy Young a year ago. And I'm just sitting there and we're doing it with these young kids and they're coming through. And I'm so proud of them. But to be realistic, it's like, I got Osuna, by the way, not a knock. I love Osuna. Mm. In the three hole when I normally have Corey Seager, there's a difference come playoff time. And not to make any excuses, but I was proud of the guys with what we had a year ago. To finish 500 with the injuries that we had and that roster construction, it was like, thought it was decent. But in today's game, No, it's not. It's not acceptable. You got to win. And I understand that. I understand that. I watched Joc Pederson have the worst year of all time. But you know what? He's a pro. He knows how to prepare. And I would point to him. Now, don't go 0 for 4 like him. And I would joke because Jock's hitting like 170. I said, now to a young player, don't go 0 for 4 like Jock. But see how Jock prepares before a game? He's not wearing himself out. He prepares like a professional to go out there. And this is what he's been doing. And that's the reason he's had a long career and successful career and been on World Series champion, because he knows how to prepare like a pro. That's what we have to get back to doing. Everything is not about exit velocity and this and velocity. And no, it's about getting in the box, knowing the swing you have, what I got today, competing, getting a pitch to hit the middle of the zone and putting a good swing on it. It's nothing beyond that. And we've complicated it so much because of the technology we have at our fingertips. And it drives me crazy because, yes, there is a time and a place for that. But the basics, they're never going to change. Having a room full of Bregmans. I used to watch that Houston Astro team when they were, you know, in the late teens.
Mm.
And it was Correa and it was Springer and it was Bregman. And I'd watch those guys. It reminded me of my early Seattle teams. It's like, see how they're talking to each other? Boom, he's talking to him. He's telling him what the tendencies are of this pitcher. They know everything. Hitting is about who's in the bullpen. What have I done this series? Who's hitting behind me? It isn't about Bert.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about Bert. It's like, what pitches am I going to get? The guy on deck with a base open, are they going to come at me? Or are they going to pitch around me? Well, how do I know that? I go to the guy on deck and say, what's your history with this guy coming into the game right now? And Edgar Martinez would say to me, Booney, I wear this guy out. Or, you know, haven't faced him much, haven't had much success. Okay, that's intel for me. Now I know, all right, Edgar wears him out. He doesn't want to face Edgar. So with the base open, he might come at me a little bit. Get it ready. If Edgar says, you know, I'm 0 for 10, I can't get a hit off this guy. Oh, Edgar, I've done pretty well off him. You know what I might be right there? Hey, he's not going to mess with me right here. That's intel. Those are the important things of hitting at the big league level that aren't talked about enough. And that's what we have to get back to, in my opinion, to making this game as great as it can be. Mm-hmm. Because we focus on the wrong things. And once again, you hit it on the head when you say, well, how else can you justify yourself other than pointing to statistics?
Yeah.
You know, I look at Mike Maddux. Love Mike Maddux. So successful in his career, his post-career. As a pitcher, he's pretty good. He just happened to be the brother of Greg, so he was really second best.
Yeah.
He's been a wonderful, he's a baseball lifer. He's been a wonderful hit pitching coach and knowledgeable. The pitchers love him. They're like, we love Maddux. He had a great staff in Texas last year. Now he goes to Anaheim, and if they're not leading everything, is it because Mike Maddux all of a sudden forgot how to do it? No, we need to take accountability as players. We win games, we lose games. Never did I sit around a clubhouse and go, man, that Skip really screwed me tonight. No, I did it. I didn't carry the mail. I didn't get it done. We as collectively didn't get it done. It's never the manager's fault. It's never the coach's fault. Problem is, they get blamed.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that's basically what's going on. As I said, I think that what the Red Sox did was they said, we got these players, we got this roster, we have the projections, we have the models. They're not living up to them. It can't be what our projections are models. It has to be something else. And to your point, like, that's not what it is. Because anytime a guy has any track record, Brett, a year ago, the Red Sox had the most home runs in April of any point in their franchise. Same hitting coach, a lot of same players. This time around, exactly opposite. Is it because of Pete Fatsy's fault? No, it's not. And ultimately, what is happening now, though, which is why this team hasn't been able to turn the corner, even though, to your point, they have some pieces, they have really good pitching. Ranger Suarez has been good up until he had the hamstring injury. All of it, it's the first guess of what Craig Breslow said in November they needed, which was somebody who hit more home runs. That's what they wanted to get. They don't get them because of their free agent approach. They aren't willing to get uncomfortable enough to get the Pete Alonso, to get the Alex Bregman. And what's happening now? They are the last team in Major League Baseball in terms of home runs. They haven't hit an opposite field home run since April 1st. That's not going to win games. And I don't care how good your pitching is. It's going to come back to bite.
And I think, you know, I've heard this a lot, and I don't know Bregman at all, but I've heard this a lot about him. He's the flight attendant in the front of the plane. When you're a rookie flyer,
oh,
and there's turbulence, Who do you look to? Your eyes go right to the flight attendant that is on a flight every day. And if she gives you a smile like everything's going to be okay, then you're going to be okay. Alex Bregman, as much as a player can be in today's times, I think he was that guy. Like, hey, guys. And it doesn't mean he's got to be hitting 330.
No.
It helps when you're doing that.
But you know what? They should have valued him more because of it. Like, yeah. You should have. If you're $10 million shy, pay the $10 million. You know why? Because what you're doing is investing in your most important commodity in Roman Anthony. Roman Anthony said to me, the WBC, that Alex Bregman sees his swing better than any other human being, and he's 100% right every time. If that guy is saying that, you know this. How important is that for the most important commodity in that lineup, which is Roman Anthony? It's crazy to me.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. Crochet, what's going on with him? He's hurt. He's on the IL.
Yeah, he's throwing. He had a shoulder inflammation, and he had it shoulder inflammation in 2023. Missed a significant amount of time. Said it's nothing like that. He's actually back throwing already, but it is sort of the reminder, the wake up call that not a lot of room for error here already. I mean, you're already dug yourself a pretty big hole, but Garrett, there's a reason why Garrett Crochet is, you know, the ace protects the everybody the day before, the day of, and the day after. And they, you know, he's so I don't think it's anything serious. I think he'll be okay.
Chapman's defying age. He's still unbelievable. Sonny Gray, he's on the IL right now. When do you expect him back?
Yeah, this week. I think he'll come back this week. He threw a simulated game the other day. And I'm with you. And I could tell like why you like Sonny Gray, because you guys also like you're thinkers. You're like I like talking baseball with him. And that's great, right? Like he's the type of guy you want other guys to be around, because he's one of these guys. I don't think he's running into the clubhouse and looking up at the Twitter. Like he's actually like wants to talk baseball.
Right.
So yeah. So I think he's definitely part of the solution, not part of the problem.
Yeah. And I followed Sonny Gray for a long time. Stuff's always been there. You know, he went to New York and they got the label of, oh, maybe he's not, you know, they always want to say that when you have not the best year in New York. Oh, well, he's not one of those guys that can play in New York. Oh, really? You're the person that determines that. But he went through that. But I think he's grown up a lot. And I just saw that move this offseason. I said, I think that's a good pickup for the Boston Red Sox. Abreu's been getting it done offensively. They're in the bottom in all the offensive categories. Bottom third. And the one bright spot, I think, has been the bullpen. Bullpen's been pretty solid.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I guess nobody talks about the bullpen, and when that's happening, that's a good thing. And it starts with Chapman and Whitlock. I mean, when you have that 1-2, it's great. The problem is that they haven't had a lot of leads. You know, they haven't been able to enact that influence of here comes the eighth and ninth, good luck getting to us. And so they have that. And, you know, I think that one thing that we should give Craig Breslow credit for is that he has sort of developed this pitching program where they have been able to weather some storms, whether it's in the bullpen and the starting rotation, with guys who have come up and succeeded. Peyton Tolley, Conley Early, this new guy, Jake Bennett, and then some guys in the bullpen, Giovanni Moran. Listen, I mean, they've done a good job in that respect. With this team, Brett, it's pretty cut and dry to me. It's just like you can't win unless you hit some home runs, because you're putting pressure on the pitching staff. And also you need five good things happen in order to score one or two good runs, two or more home runs. I mean, it's incredible to me, like how hard it is for them to score. And that's going to put pressure on the pitchers as the season goes along as well.
Realistically, you look at this roster right now, any chance they can compete in this division? From what you see thus far.
Yeah, I mean, they could compete for a wild card. I think, as you point out, the American League kind of stinks again. You know, they're, as we sit here, they're 13-21, and but they're only three games back of the wild card. But they have a history. They have evidence that this can be done. A turnaround can be done. They had a 13-21 record in 2022, and went 29-10 and got right back into it. But the problem is that with that team, all the guys that were the type of guys that we're talking about, Bogarts, JD Martinez, Rafael Devers, Christian Vasquez, Trevor Story, like those guys got hot and they also didn't panic. And they also understood like how you can dig yourself out of this. And they did. So they can do it. But I do think much more than that team that they're going to need to do something significant to change over the roster. Because the other thing that we haven't even talked about is that you have a guy in Masa Yoshida sitting on the bench doing nothing, who might be your best overall hitter right now. So, yeah, it's a weird roster.
All right. Rob, I appreciate you coming on, man. Thanks for catching me up. Weird things going on early in baseball, not only in Philly and Boston, but across, like we pointed out, who's, you know, four above 500 teams in the American League as we stand. Who would have guessed that the National League Central is the class of baseball? I never saw that coming, but now the numbers say it is.
Listen, it's always a pleasure, an honor. And I look forward to the Odyssey Christmas party where we can talk about baseball.
I'll wear my Santa hat. Yeah, all right, Rob, I appreciate it. For those of you watching the Brett Boone podcast, check it out on YouTube. For those of you that download the podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you download your podcast, until next time, keep it here. Thanks, Rob.